Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. How about yourself?
I am great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any exciting news on the farm? I got the update,
gosh,
which I appreciated.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, we were kind of beside ourselves this afternoon because we finally got all of the trees in the orchard weeded and composted and mulched and redressed. We've been wanting to do that for months, and now it's done.
Great.
Yeah.
That is fabulous.
Mm-hmm,
I can picture them all cozy up with their new dresses and ready to grow.
Ready to grow. Yes, they look very excited. Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have an announcement here.
What have you got?
Well, the next recording and listening class, Receptivity to Grace, starts August 27th. So sign up right away to hone RL skills, explore the practice technique of interviewing, and deepen intimacy with awareness. The five-week class is for old-timers as well as beginners.
Yeah. You know, the thing about it is, we talk about this a lot. I know we talk about it everywhere. We're talking about it all the time out at the farm. But the most difficult thing, as we know, is sticking with stuff. Right? So
yes.
Nobody in this practice who's done this practice for any length of time has any doubt about how important recording and listening is and how important the techniques like interviewing are and that sort of thing. And so we have top-tier nagging, right? We have
yes,
commitment buddies. We have, you know, these things. And so taking a class like that, we commit for a length of time. We're with other people. We're doing the practice, and it just deepens everything. And the main thing it does is just keep us on track. So, yeah, I hope people take advantage of it. I bet they will.
Great. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And for this and other practice opportunities, please visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, please press *6 and then 1 to make guest show. And I would encourage folks, Sherry, especially those who haven't been in the queue recently, to do that.
We have listeners rather than participants. Spectators rather than participants. Oh, my goodness gracious. All right.
And I have really enjoyed the focus on cue practice as who we are and what we do.
Oh, gosh. You know, thank you for that, Michael, because Zen, we always say, it's like improv, right? It's the whole point is to be here, to be in the moment, not to be prepared, not to plan, not to figure something out, not to meet the ever-changing phony standards of the voices in the head, be here and present. That one of the best ways to practice that is to be in the queue. Somebody says,
yes,
unmute, and there you are. And and people report, they just watch, oh my God, I don't have anything to say. As if just opening your mouth and speaking to whatever is going on in this moment is not enough. It often amazes me. So, you know, there'll be a conversation going on. Say, you know, I've been talking to somebody on this call. And then somebody gets unmuted and they don't have anything planned. It's like, well, were you listening to the last conversation? Because if you were, something got triggered, right? You had an insight.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be some other thing that's not happening now. It can just be right here, what's going on right now. So, yeah. It's cue practice is the best.
Fabulous. Thanks for that, Severino. That's exactly what we're saying. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. So let's get this party started, Sherry.
All right.
Here we go. first caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Pasha, practicing Q practice.
Good man. Hello, Pasha.
I was not placing in my queue, thinking like I'll have no chance getting in. So, but here I am.
Here and, we are.
And
yeah.
I had a question growing. One is not for me, but for my friend, who is suffering deeply with migraines.
Ooh.
And she was able to listen to Open Air, and a couple times even trying to get in the queue, but every time, and today is another such a day when Open Air times comes, migraine becomes so debilitating.
Yeah.
Then it becomes not possible to call. And I said that, wow, it's a very interesting situation when their sickness prevents going to the doctor. And
well, and when there, it seems like there's so little doctors can do, it's interesting to me that I'm kind of surrounded at this point by people who suffer terribly, horribly with migraines. I don't know if I should say that way, because with awareness practice, what we get to is you can have terrible pain. You can, but you don't. It doesn't necessarily mean you're suffering. So I don't want to phrase that as if everybody who has that kind of pain is suffering with it. Do they want it? Are they happy about it? Do they like it? No. But that's not. So I don't want to. I don't want to frame it that way. But it's miserable. It's terrible. It's awful. And as far as I can tell, I guess there are some new medications that are out. I don't know anything about them or side effects or that sort of thing. But most people that I talk to, you just kind of survive it, right? Which is not to say that things don't change over time. And I have one person that I know fairly well, and who has gone from having those kind of debilitating migraines with great regularity to having them not as often and not as severe. Gives the credit to less stress, being more physically active, and mostly those two things. Being more physically active and having less stress. So
thank you. I'm not surrounded by people with migraine. This is only like second person I met in my life with this. In trying to understand them, I'm looking at sometimes I have a big headache, or I was sick recently, and in my experience, I saw that image as like, sickness is kind of weighing me down. It's kind of like brings me down to the ground. I need to lay down or something. So it's kind of like weighing on me. But then, after retreat, I'm practicing that practice of awareness. And, I'm aware. I'm still seeing. I'm having these body sensations. I'm touching, I'm hearing, and I'm being aware of everything going on simultaneously, and I'm seeing how all these things go somewhere where awareness is, and And that moves me to a different place. That place is slightly above that heavy blanket of misery that was on top of me. Now I am on top of the blanket that weighs down the person, and from that top I can have compassion for that human who have that sickness or that pain. But I'm no longer under the weight, or I'm just like, you know, holding a sick child in my hands and feeling for it, but I'm not dropping.
You're not identified with it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. That's the whole secret, and that's why so often in practice, what we talk about with it's anything like that, as you say, whether it's a migraine or the flu or the whatever it is that is happening that has that. Kind of taking the energy out of the body,
yes.
To be in an attitude of sympathetic kindness with the human being. That because the intelligence, or what to me you're pointing out, the awareness that we identify with as ourselves, is not the mind and it's not the body, right? And that's the experience that you're describing. Right, it can be in sympathy, in compassion for the body, for the person who sees, in this case, himself as that body that is struggling, and in that disidentified way, we don't need to suffer. In fact, what we're experiencing is compassion, loving kindness, understanding. And that can be applied to anything, right? Anything the person is going through, we can be there with that without being identified with it and suffering over it.
Yes, yes. And what else dropped in? Remember a few years ago we were talking about not feeling bad?
Mm-hmm.
So there are two pashas. One is below kind of heavy weight of circumstances, and one is above. So the only one below, hear the story and starts to feel bad. The one who is above, who is holding him as a child, is how can he feels bad? He has, sick child in his arms.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally kind of became clear for me, what is it stop feeling bad does? It moves me from identified with the one who is suffering to the one who can be that sympathetic, how you say it?
Yeah. That is so important. I just want to underline it, okay? Because the expression that we have that nothing changes until the beatings stop, right?
Mm.
Our life will just actually never progress beyond a certain point as long as there's self-hatred, because that's we're identifying. If we're in self-hatred, we're identified with the person who feels bad and believes her or himself to be deserving of, is willing to accept that kind of judgment and punishment and bad treatment. And so as long as that identification is going on, we can't be in the place that you're describing. We can't move to that sympathetic kindness, that compassion and understanding. So, it's a critical shift that we have to make. And Pasha, while we're on this subject, I've been looking at it a lot lately, just that, and how to communicate to people in a way that is understandable or effective or whatever, that those voices that talk to them are not real. You know, that we make that statement all the time, and yet the relationship with that self-hatred is so deep and so strong that it seems kind of impossible for people to step back enough to say, that's a voice that I'm listening to. It's not real. I'm listening to it, but it has nothing to do with me. And that's the shift that you made. And it's just critical. It's everything. It's everything.
Yes, yes. When we drop the self-hate, then the whole problem disappears. The whole suffering becomes...
Yes.
What helps me is kind of while I'm not in this kind of desperate situation, I can practice just feeling compassion for Pasha, who was or will be, just kind of imagining that. So I'm getting more acclimated with the place of compassion and kindness and understanding. Because, well, while I'm in that miserable place, there, you know, hearing about like, oh, it's all not real, you know, it's hard because...
Oh, sure. Sure it's not. Yeah.
Because it's our voices are so loud, so believable.
Yeah.
And like in my case, when I was sick, they told me it was my fault because blah, 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 I didn't, you know, put a jacket or, you know, and I saw like how I immediately agree. Yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't prepare for myself. It is my fault. And it kind of like, oops, it so quickly became kind of like truth in my body. It's once I believe it,
well,
I'm trapped.
And it means something, right? It means something. So if it's your fault, what? Okay. I mean, so it's your fault. So what? Does that mean we don't take care of you? Does that mean we just write you off and if he dies, he dies? I mean, after all, it was his fault. It's so bizarre when we're able to step back and look at it. Okay, maybe he really did something that led to that. Great. What does that have to do with anything? Nothing.
Mm.
Except we're trained to feel bad and then believe that, well, it's my fault. I deserve to be punished. And again, until we step out of that whole thing, we're victims. And I really appreciate what you said. Don't wait until it's a miserable time and you're just mired down in self-hatred. Practice all the time. Practice stepping back from that person in the way that we just talked about. You can step back from him, whether he's sick, whether he's well, whatever is going on. You can step back and just observe him and appreciate him and help him, be kind to him, support him, right?
Yeah.
And so to practice that when there isn't anything, in quotes, wrong, there's no struggle, that disidentification is really going to serve us when the human being gets in trouble.
Yes.
In the same way, you know, you're not him. You're the awareness that can observe him. And that's going to hold you, hold him when self-hate tries to come in there and take over. You'll just see that, no, he doesn't deserve that. No, that's not going to happen.
Yes, it's like preparation for the earthquake, like in San Francisco, they do that kind of reinforcement. Nobody knows if it's earthquake going to be like tomorrow or when, but while we can, you know, let's do something now to help when situation will appear.
Yes, and if it never appears, great.
Yes.
Great. It's not like the preparation hurt anybody.
Yeah.
All right.
Still good practice.
Thank you,
Thank
Pasha.
You so much. Gosho.
Thank you, Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. That was fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And Sherry, yes, indeed. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Next caller.
Hello, who's this?
Yes.
This is Elizabeth.
Hey, Elizabeth.
It is such a delight to talk with you.
Yeah, it's
and
been
so
a while.
For the opportunity. Yes. The place that I'm living, I can't get Wi-Fi, which means I can't make phone calls. There's no cell
Good
service.
Grief. What are you
But
out
I'm
in
able
the
to
woods
listen
somewhere?
Yes, I'm living out in the country in a hermitage.
Wow.
And I'm just out and about tonight, so I took the opportunity to get in the queue.
Very good. Very good. So what's going on?
Well, the last time we spoke, I've been looking at anger.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you pointed me to the fact that I had a lot of conditioning about anger.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been looking at my relationship to anger instead of anger.
Ooh, very wise, very wise. Yeah, yeah. The anger is not the problem.
Anger is not the problem.
The person having problem with anger is the problem. Very good,
yes,
very good.
And it goes back centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the only one.
No, you are definitely not the only one. Especially those primarily those of a female sort of incarnation. Mm-hmm.
Yes, people have a hard time with females having anger.
Oh, yes. It's deeply wrong.
And I've got like a list of things that I've seen about it, but the most recent one is that other people's anger doesn't control me anymore.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Like somebody just showing disapproval to me was enough to change my behavior.
Uh-huh. And back in the day. Now,
yes, well, like a couple months ago.
Yeah, way in the past. And
way
so now
past.
I'm guessing that part of that is you have a deeper relationship with projection.
I'm as a six, I'm a natural projectionist and very good at it.
Uh-huh. And are you seeing that other people also project and that maybe you don't need to take that on?
And it has nothing to do with me.
Nothing to do with you. Exactly so. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that a revelation?
It is. Very
a la our last conversation, not ours, but the one that I just had.
Yes.
It just changes everything.
It changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing comes up to be met and kind of examined, and then I'm up to my eyeballs in. But it's just fascinating that anger is like hot peppers.
Mm.
It adds spice to things. And if I don't have a conditioned relationship with it, and for me that means eating it and stuffing it down,
mm-hmm.
Then it doesn't really last.
No. That's why, Elizabeth, as you know, our precept says not to be angry. It doesn't say not to get angry. It says not to be angry for exactly the reason that you're pointing at. Yeah.
But in the way interpreted it is stuff it down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And the thing about it is when you allow it simply to be there, briefly, as with every other set of sensations that passes through, it's hard, isn't it, really, even to call it anger?
Hmm. I have been doing that, too,
mm-hmm.
giving it different names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. When the intensity flowers.
Yes, I'm having a great deal of intensity about this right now.
And, yeah, that's another important bit about it. It's like anger by itself is not really a problem, but when you add control to anger, then it's dangerous.
Yes, it is. And when you don't take responsibility for it.
Yes.
Right? When you don't claim it as your own personal experience, people become offended quickly.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I direct it outward.
Oh, yeah. Oh, people are not receptive. As they should not be. Right?
It's none of their business.
It's none of their business. And it has nothing to do with them. Yeah.
And it keeps mm-hmm. them going.
Absolutely.
If anybody else gets involved, it's really hard to let it go.
Yes. And with our previous conversation, again, once that gets started, you get angry with me, I get upset with you, and now you feel bad because you've upset me, and maybe I'm going to whatever.
And women are supposed to be angry.
Yeah, that's right. Just on and on and on and on and on and on and on until we wear it out completely. But it doesn't go away because it's unclean and it just sticks to us.
And then it becomes a grudge. And then by kind of like treating it more lightly, the thing that I've been working with recently is I'm not real.
Oh, well, that's helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. And by stuffing the anger and kind of like having a conditioned relationship with the anger, it makes me real.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. That is such a profound insight, Elizabeth. Yes. Yes.
Which has nothing to do with me.
Say it again.
It has nothing to do with me. The insight is
The insight, right. Yeah, but you were the lucky one to see it. So there is that. So,
well,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, I catch a glimpse of it every so often because this feeling of realness is
mm-hmm.
real.
Yes, it feels real when you identify with it.
Right? Yes.
But with that coming and going that you're describing, you can have that sense that people talk about that sounds completely wacky until you have the experience, which is you only exist in this moment.
Yes.
So if you don't go up into your head and start thinking about what just happened a second ago or what's going to happen a minute from now, you're not real in that sense. You're not dragging anything through life. You're just being created in each and every moment.
Yes.
Unfolded.
You know, the sun's going down and there's a nice mist over the mountains and it's, a really lovely moment to be in.
Mm-hmm. And you want to be in it. Not off making something real that isn't real.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm addicted to being real.
Well, most people are. That's why there's such a fear of death. Right?
Yes.
Because then what's real is gonna what's gonna happen to what's real? What's gonna happen to me?
Yeah, well, all I can do is send out vibrations.
Because,
in 100 years, I'm not even going to be a whisper. My name will be forgotten.
Completely.
Yeah.
Isn't that freeing?
Yeah, it's psychedelic.
Yeah. If we think about all the people who have been born on this earth, who grew up conditioned, who worried and stressed and got upset and disappointed and all of the things, as if all of it mattered terribly, terribly, terribly. And then they died.
Yeah.
And we have no idea anything about them.
Nothing. Only a handful of people will last.
Yeah, and we don't really know anything about them.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and kind of seeing that I'm not real is actually beautiful.
Yes, yes. Now, I will say, because it's my job, and I don't want people to think I've gone too far afield here, what you are essentially is real. And it's eternal.
Yes.
What's not?
But it's not what I think is real.
That's right. It's not the personality. It's not the memories and the habits and the beliefs
and
assumptions.
The growing old and then.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, very good. Well, I'm glad
But even if I can't call in, I am here every week and have enjoyed.
Well, very good.
The conversation.
That's good to know. Yeah, that's good to know, because otherwise, you know, people fade away, and I kind of never know. It's funny. I don't know why, but I never know why anything. But so many people who have been a part of Sangha, part of practice through the years, seem to be cycling around, and it's really nice, because, you know, people go away. I don't know. Are they alive? Are they dead? I have no idea. No idea what happened to them, right? And so it's nice.
Yeah.
So now I'll know. Well, I don't hear from her but that often, but she's out there looking at them mountains.
Yeah, and occasionally I'm out after dark, so like that.
Yeah. Less often as the seasons change, but that's good. When you are on a Tuesday evening, you can check in with us.
And I'm very grateful to have a practice to keep me company.
Oh, it's the best, isn't it? You're never alone.
It really is.
Yep, we're never alone, never lonely. It's beautiful. All right, well, thank you,
yes,
my dear.
Thank you, I love you.
Go happy.
Night.
All right, good night.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. And that was fabulous, Sherry. I really enjoyed that.
Me too.
Good. And we're going to go to Good News Update, Sherry, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. And Jen, your guest is now live, and I'll turn it over to you for Good News Update.
Great. Thank you, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Helga, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating as a farm steward at a Longview farm. Welcome, Helga.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah. Very happy to talk about it, because it was so fabulous.
Mm.
Just the whole package, the everything, you know. I was, you know, when I got the invitation, I was just kind of reflecting on that time, on those 9 days that I was there. And, you know, back here, one thing that I noticed that I brought with me was just more energy. I just feel I have more energy. And a lightness, and I just noticed the difference, you know, from before I left and then coming back, and so that feels really wonderful, you know. Just
yeah.
You know what it felt like was like I had an energetic plug, and somebody pulled that out, and I drank a bottle of Drano, and it just kind of flushed it all out. Then I was just there and there's so many things that I could talk about. You know, I had like a lot of pretty deep insights into some things that happened, and without having to talk about it, you know, there was no, it wasn't a retreat in that sense. So there was no structure for that. I was just there, you know, and doing, working.
Yeah.
And it just happened, you know. I had like these intense, terrible dreams for about a week, and then it stopped. And it's just being in that field. That worked on me.
Yeah, I just pictured the Rumi's field, right out beyond the field of doing right and doing wrong. Right there, you are.
Yeah.
And just finding yourself. I mean, just. That's so beautiful, Helga, just that place of, I mean, being so directly connected with kind of the life force, if you will, on so many levels, right? That, and what a lovely image you started with, of just kind of cleared out and completely available to that life energy that's there, and literally participating it in terms of participating with it in terms of being on the farm and nourishing all that's growing there. And as you say, no formal structure of, you know, processing insights or that kind of thing like we would have on retreat, but easy to project so much presence that facilitates just that channel for all that awareness to be there and all the insight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, I mean, so my room was so beautiful, and it looked out onto the farm, and the silence there, it's like in the monastery, you know, the silence there is so deep and so profound, and it's just this wide open space just from the landscape, and you know, being able to sit in meditation every morning, that was really wonderful for me, because with the time change, I live on the East Coast, it doesn't work for me. I can't participate. And so, you know, to have that was really, really wonderful. I just so enjoyed that. And, and you know, I have to say, the best part for me, or I don't know the best part, but it was so wonderful to work on the land, like really physical. I mean, for me, what I'm used to, pretty hard work. You know, I don't swing a hammer around, you know, every day in my life. So it was, you know, it was like pretty, you know, physical, very physical work with a few other people. That was such, you know, such wonderful company, and working next to Sherry, who's swinging the scythe. I mean, the whole thing was just so, I just remembered how much I love hard physical work. I love it. My body loves it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I crawled into bed every night. My knees were hurting. My back was hurting just because I'm not used to this kind of work. But I felt so good.
Yeah. It's the best feeling, isn't it? Whatever, you know, that quote we sometimes talk about of that feeling at the end of the day, you know, just being on life's scrap heap, you know, just being completely used up in the best possible way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, really enjoyed that a lot. You know, and I think, you know, one of the things I have been thinking, you know, being here where I live, you know, my job ended last year and I'm really looking at, you know, what do I want to do next? And that sense that I felt I was part of something bigger, you know, this whole concept of the farm, you know, growing food for the food bank, the whole operation of the compost that, you know, I love that, you know, I love that whole idea and working on the land, taking care of it, being stewards and growing stuff and experimenting, and it just gave me this sense of, you know, being part of something bigger, and that is, I think that was the biggest part for me. It was just so gratifying, you know. I just felt like that's what I want, you know. That's what I'm longing for is just being a part of something like that, and being a part of that for that time was just it was just all I ever wanted.
I'm so right with there with you, Helga.
Yeah,
you know, I was thinking about the, you know, the blog from the guide this week. Last week, last Wednesday. And just that place of, you know, it's so easy to, you know, go to a place of like, is this working? Is that working? You know, is this going how we want it to go? And then that place that you're describing that she talks about in that article of just stepping back and just realizing, wow, just the transformation that's happening just by being present in this beautiful place, in this beautiful work with these beautiful people. I mean, it doesn't get more full and, you know, successful than that. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, you know, it feels good. It feels like goodness.
Yeah.
What that feels like. And I want to be part of that. You know, I just want to be, do my part in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Truly. Yeah, exactly. Just show up and do whatever part life is giving us in that to do, and just wholeheartedly give ourselves to be that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that was really, it was very healing for me.
Mm.
You know, that, and, mm-hmm. and, you know, however that is going to unfold, I have no idea. But it was just, you know, it just really, you know, and the other thing I just thought about was, I used to be part of a community garden here, and before that in California I had a big garden, so I was doing that, you know, and I just you know, I think we are, I mean, that was my sense, you know, I mean, humans I think means like people of the earth, and I feel like now we have become people of technology. And to go back, you know, to go back to those roots. It's just the best.
It is the best. We were actually just talking about it at the farm this afternoon. Just that there is kind of a sense of, you know, wanting to return to that, to really being connected with, you know, work is one way to talk about it. But in what you're describing, just being here with the actual, you know, we're in form and being with the form around us and participating in that way. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Helga, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon to talk about it. So
thanks for having me there. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for being with us today. Go happy.
Go happy.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Well, thank you, Jen, and thank you, Helga. And welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And that was a testimonial, wasn't it, Sherry?
I love it. I'm just grinning from ear to ear, as you can imagine. I mean, just
Yes.
I wish I could do it all day long, every day. It's just absolutely the best. Yeah, and it's so it's what Helga's describing. You know, it's just there's nothing about it that isn't good. You know, just people are kind and sincere and caring. Really, just goodness. Love in action, and it's so beautiful. And I wish it for everybody. I wish, not particularly this little farm, but that kind of thing, as Helga said, you know, to be a part of something bigger than our own little selves. That's because we're so conditioned to feel separate from everyone else, separate from the earth, separate from, and to be in that place where we can just drop all that separateness and just be in peace and spaciousness and beauty, and to feel good about every single thing that you're doing. It's marvelous.
It is marvelous. Mm-hmm. And that's what this practice gives to me. So,
yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah. All right. Well.
And we have another caller here.
All right then.
All right.
Let's talk to that person.
You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, you are now live. Are you there?
Yeah, I didn't know if that was me or not.
It's you.
It's you.
Okay.
It's you. Who are you?
My name's Cynthia.
Hi, Cynthia.
I ordered your book, Don't Suffer, Communicate, but it hasn't arrived yet. So.
Oh, that's not me, Cynthia. I have nothing to do with technology, business, money.
No, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying I need a little bit of a coaching.
Okay.
Until I read the book. It's just I'm seeing a friend I've known for a long time, and I ruminate. I'm already anticipating this friction that seems to come up when we're together. When she asks me a question, that's like a rhetorical question, like, isn't that a nice sunset? Or, that was a good movie, wasn't it? And I get really angry because I feel, you know, boxed in because I just have this, like, window to say I agree, yes or no. And I haven't been able to speak up and say, you know, when you ask me rhetorical questions, I feel boxed in.
Well, we could, first of all, I just got a text, Cynthia, that said your book went out yesterday.
Oh, thank you.
Isn't that good? Yeah. So, whew, there, we've taken care of one thing. So, a possibility that I would offer for your consideration is, so you say to me, that was a good movie, wasn't it? And I could say to you, tell me, what was your favorite part? Or what did you like best about it?
Exactly. Now, I want to open it up. I want to open up the conversation.
That's,
correct.
That's right. And the odds are good that your friend will not notice that you didn't answer the rhetorical question.
Oh, okay.
Yeah? Yeah? So there's the skill in the communication.
Okay.
Right. Yeah? So instead of feeling like you're put on the spot and you need to answer something, and which I would project is where the irritation comes from, you know, why don't you tell me what you think? Why are you asking me what I think?
Yeah.
Yeah? I can bring this subject up. You did. So, and so you can come from that place. Well, what was your experience? Tell
yes.
me. Yeah, tell me what okay. you liked about it, or yeah.
Because I've already gone into where I'm organizing how I have to.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, thank you.
That'll just make you stressful. And okay. and besides which, it never works out that way, right? We get our whole thing planned out, and then the person doesn't do what we're prepared for. So you might as well just go into it unprepared and having a few of those little tools in your tool belt so that you can reflect, you know, so that was a good movie, wasn't it? Tell me what made it a good movie for you.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the other person really wants to tell you. They're just being polite. they're just setting you up to say something so they can tell you what they think.
I guess it's just I have to get over the anger of feeling like I've been on long, you know, car rides or hikes with her, and every question is just like, that's a nice, don't you think that's a nice thing? That, don't you think, like, she's asking me to agree with what she thinks.
That's exactly right.
That, but I don't have to go into telling her how much I resent that.
No. That's not going to be helpful, and not it's not going to be supportive of the friendship, right? Because here's the thing, at least from the way I see it, she doesn't experience it that way.
Uh-huh.
So if you were to point that out to her, she would probably feel defensive.
Yeah.
Misunderstood, accused unjustly, and you would go off down a different track that really has nothing to do with your point. So you might as well stick with finding out how to and practicing being skillful where you are so that you don't have to get pulled into these other quagmires.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's mm-hmm. really helpful. Thank you. That's really helpful.
Good. And after you get the book... then where do you live?
I'm in the Bay Area here.
Oh, Bay Area? Well, you might get it before you leave then. I think there is a section in it on facilitation skills, you know, drawing out, clarifying, and reflecting, and that's where you want to live. It is. Now, this is not our motivation, okay, but it is about the most protected place a person can live, because you get so good at bringing it back to the other person.
Yeah.
So that, because it's their deal. And of course, you know, when you're around other people with those skills, then you get to see what your deal is,
mm-hmm.
right? How much, what you're bringing to it. So
yeah.
just if you can approach it as a workshop, and even your, you know, watching your anger and maybe using some of the techniques to find out about that. You know, okay, so this friend isn't the most skillful communicator in the world, probably has a lot of other good qualities,
yeah.
and is it really something I need to get upset about? I don't think so.
Yeah. I think I probably have to look at why it's so triggering for me, but not in the context of this friendship.
Yes. Okay. Exactly. And so so a technique like interviewing, you know, to interview that person who gets so upset, yes, absolutely. Because that enables you not to be that person in the situation. You don't want that person who's going to get triggered to be interacting with this friend. In fact, that person really ought to stay home. Right? And you take somebody on this trip with this friend who isn't bothered by that. And you have lots of aspects of your personality who wouldn't be bothered by that.
Right. Just a clarification, it's not a trip. We're going to a movie together. At this point, I don't travel with her. I'm holding within, you know. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, I got it. You've pared it down to the manageable. Yeah. Oh, that really is good, because you know what's going to happen when that movie is over, right? I mean, you know what the conversation is going to be. So in that sense, you can, you know, be practiced up on your reflecting and drawing out and clarifying. And yeah, that's good. Who knows? It might go so well that, you know, you go for a movie and a walk. Or even a movie and a dinner. Anything is possible.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you.
Okay. You're so welcome. Gosh, oh.
Thanks for joining us, Cynthia. That was fun, Sherry. And we have time for at least one more caller here.
All right,
here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Tony from Athens.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael. Well, I wasn't planning to be in the queue at all, but the beginning of the call, there was such an invitation that I jumped into the queue.
Very good.
Because I had a reflective listening buddy call just a little bit ago, and one of the things that was so great is I spoke on the call how I was feeling nervous, and I didn't know what I was feeling nervous about. It had started earlier in the day, and that opened up. Then I looked at the next thing about that, how I was feeling overwhelmed, and then it was interesting how I had no idea why I was feeling the way I was, but starting my time of speaking, just starting with where I was, and then kept going and looked at what might have been creating this anxiety. And so that was great, just right there.
Yes, and so, Tony, I've said Allah three times tonight, our previous conversation, all that was happening is that you were talking about what was going on with you and someone was reflecting you, right?
Exactly.
Saying back. So you got to hear very clearly exactly what you were saying. And that was what moved you to a different, I'm guessing, a greater clarity?
Yes. It's a deeper awareness of what was maybe going on for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Isn't it, I mean, it's kind of a, I don't know. I don't know what the word is for it. It doesn't seem possible that you, all you're doing is talking and hearing what you're saying, and it changes everything for you.
Yeah. I mean, I was really amazed. Even though I've been doing reflective listening since the beginning, it's still the things that amaze me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And it's, of course, it's why recording and listening is so popular, right? Because mm-hmm. If we don't have a buddy right then, we can be a buddy and allow that person to just talk and talk and talk and then play it back, and they get to hear what they're saying, and there we are observing the whole process, and again, we just move to a new place.
Yes. Yes.
We're no longer stuck.
Yeah, it's very helpful. I do sometimes just, I'm working on something, I will just hit record, and then just talk. Like, we used to call it nap. But just
nattering,
talk.
Yes.
Talk,
yeah.
Talk and talk.
Yeah, this is what's going on, and I feel this way, and I don't know. I think maybe it's this, but I don't know. I was thinking about that thing that happened that you're just wandering around, and yet you're closing in on, and pretty soon you're gonna see it. You're gonna hear it.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And what was so helpful in my call is what I saw that I believe that maybe got this anxiety going was I have a meeting of a group I'm a part of, and I had just read an email that there's just going to be a meeting on Thursday, and I hadn't expected that. And so, but in my conversation, my reflective listening buddy call, I get really self-hate criticizes me after these meetings, that I shouldn't have said, or it was stupid or something. And I mean, I've come light years from where I used to be as far as just talking to people, but there's something about being in this meeting, I feel kind of inferior. And so I've just been looking at it just a little bit since my call, and we'll look at it more, but I thought, well, here's a chance to talk more with Sherry about just this.
Well, here's the thing that it strikes me immediately when you say that, which is, again, it's a workshop. So you're going to go into this meeting with a plan that when the meeting is over, you're going to sit down and you're going to interview the critic.
Oh, okay.
And in a really specific way. So when the voice says something, boy, it calls you stupid. You know, first of all, if you're so damn smart, voice in my head, why didn't you talk in the meeting? No. Right? You're not going to say anything. You sit there like you know everything, but you're not going to let anybody hear it. And then you're going to beat me up later. Okay, so we're not having that. So you sit down with your pen and paper, your pencil and paper. Okay, let's hear it. Well, that was really stupid. Well, tell me, what was stupid about that? What what would you have said if you were there? How would it have been better to do that? I need some specifics here because I'm going to go to another one of these meetings. I want you to tell me exactly how to, okay? The next time you hear it, and I don't think it's going to be excited about this conversation, okay? It might go to things like, well, it was just stupid. Okay, so we're talking to a 12-year-old, right? So I think if you don't have any more to offer me than that, I really don't think I can take your opinion very seriously. So I'm just gonna go with, you're projecting, I don't need to hear it. Anything else? Okay? And every time it comes up with something, you do that. You facilitate it. You interview it.
Wow. Now that's revolutionary.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why? You're the human, right? they didn't invite that thing to the meeting. They're asking you to come to the meeting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because in looking at it, it's like it's and sounds so real, and it feels true. Like, I really am not as experienced. I really don't know as much, but I'm a part of this group, and it's important. So instead of trying to keep it from happening,
yes. And Tony, the important part of that is, and what you have to prove to yourself is, that voice is just self-hate. It doesn't have anything to do with any content at all. It's just gonna tell you you're stupid and useless, right? If it's a meeting, if it's your art, if it's your teaching, it doesn't care what the subject is. It's just gonna come in and tell you that you're useless and stupid. So that's the part that needs to be revealed and proved, that that's all that's going on. Because you know what? If it has some really good advice for you, if it can tell you how to be a better part of that group and how to offer really essential things, you want to hear that. But it doesn't. Doesn't know squat. And that's what you have to prove to yourself.
Okay.
So, you know,
yes.
somebody who just stands there and says you're stupid, you know, I mean, how seriously can we take that? Really?
Right.
That's all you've got? I'm stupid?
Yeah. Well, that, I really appreciate that, because it's like I try to talk myself into, it's okay, no reviews,
yeah.
But the proving it to myself, that's the missing part.
That's right. There's no... You don't have to defend yourself to a voice that calls you names. You know, you have to prove to yourself that it doesn't know anything. That's very helpful for me, Tony, in my, how do I get people to see this? Okay, there's an appearance that it has something to do with the content, that it has to do with that meeting, right? But it doesn't. That's one thing. It's just saying the same things to you that it says to you all the time under all these different kinds of circumstances, right? So seeing that, and that it's just a program, that it can't offer you anything, then once you see that, it's much easier to step back and say, that's just nonsense. That's a hateful program inside my head. I don't need to give it any credence whatsoever.
That's going to be great.
Yeah, don't defend yourself. Whatever you do, do not defend yourself. Go on the offensive. Make it prove to you that it has the credentials to criticize you.
Wow, I don't know that I've done that before. So
and it's exciting. You can't wait for that meeting, huh? It's
almost
Thursday.
Yay!
Yay!
Good.
Thank you, Tony. Go happy.
Thanks for joining us, Tony. And wow, that was a great way to end the show. Sherry, I enjoyed that. I'm going on
me
the offensive
too.
Now.
We have to take that stuff from disembodied voices in our head. Come on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you, Michael.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, and thank everyone. Yeah. Go happy.
All right.